Hey everybody, welcome to Warmans. Season 2. Throw that away. Let me try that again.
Yeah, you just made the opening. Congratulations.
Yeah, great.
Warmans!
Hey everybody, welcome to Warmans. Season 2, Episode 8, Part 2. We fucked up the first one.
Fucked up the first one.
Well, nobody did. Your computer ate it. So we recorded an ep after a local tournament a couple weeks back. And then it got eaten. So we're trying again. Hopefully this one works. In fact, speaking of that tournament, just real briefly, just to talk about it for a sec, we had a pretty nice turnout at a local tournament at Gamers Gauntlet. We had our buddy Tyler come up from Dayton.
Yep.
Which is a pretty damn long drive.
Yeah, it's hardly a local tournament for him.
Yeah, he drove, I think it was like three and a half hours. Yeah. We had 18, 19?
Yeah, I think 18.
18, yeah. Chuck ended up winning it, and yep, he was playing Mercs, playing a lot of My Colossal Knocks You Down kind of bullshit, so, which is what he did to me.
Yeah.
Special
bottom of two?
Special shout-out to that game where I got bottom of two'd.
I think anybody that watches Twitter or Facebook knows about that already.
Probably, yep. So, and let me rewind for a second. I'm Brian, a.k.a. Pain Favorite. That's Bill, a.k.a. Roast Bill slash...
Formerly PG Roast Bill.
Formerly PG Roast Bill slash your dad. but yeah, so that tournament was fun, and otherwise what have we been doing? We've been running a journeyman.
Yeah, it's been going really well.
Yeah, we did a little modified battle box kind of as of the start, and now it's pretty much up to just 35 points, whatever the fuck. And there's probably about 5 or 6, 7 new, like relatively new guys, or guys who were like not regular players on our night. And so this is just kind of you know,
we needed that little boost to the body count at the store.
This is like War Machine flypaper, basically. Just gonna see who sticks.
Yeah.
So
you have a pretty good theory about how that stuff works.
Yeah. It's just a numbers game. And if you're not running journeyman leagues or intro leagues, you will eventually have zero players.
Yeah.
Like if you just with given infinite time, you will have no players eventually.
Yeah.
Because people give up, they move away, they get busy, they have kids, whatever.
Yeah.
You got to bring in new people. There's always going to be attrition in your group. So. But yeah, it's been working really well, and the modified journeyman part was basically just like a 15-point mangled metal, tooth and claw, bring whatever caster you want. And there was a banned list, and the banned list didn't have anything to do with power level. It was
like
about,
confusing level.
Yeah, it was like, so no cav casters, no casters that bring, no units, no solos. Basically,
or companions.
Yeah, and if a caster brings any models that are not a mangled metal appropriate model, they were banned essentially. So no Gore Shade ones, no battle engine casters, none of that shit. But
So no, I think that was good. This was kind of spearheaded by you, and I think you did a really good job with it.
Yeah. So this is the week coming up here is our last week. We did it 6 weeks, which I think is about right.
Yeah.
Feels about right. Like I'm pretty tired of it by now, and I think the other regulars are ready to move back to playing 50-point games and whatever. And I think the new guys have gotten a lot of good experience out of it. And we're going to do, instead of having prizes, like we didn't count wins at all.
Yeah, I think this part is probably the biggest, like, kudo for what you did.
Yeah, basically, you can play up to, you can play as many games as you want, but you can record, you get a raffle ticket for every game you play per week, up to 3 games. And at the end of it, we're going to basically create a raffle for a bunch of prizes that either extra stock the store has that they don't need anymore. Some of our Gamers Gauntlet special
templates,
the Muse on Minis ones that are amazing. We're going to do some other some people have donated some stuff. Like Tommy gave us a big box full of stuff that he, from various factions, stuff he doesn't play.
Yep.
So that was really nice of him.
Yep.
So we're going to raffle off all that stuff. And basically it'll be kind of a silent raffle style where you just put X amount of tickets per item on a sheet of paper, turn it all in, and then we generate who wins. And so essentially there's no – and there's also – you get tickets for paint. Every 10 models – 10 points of models you paint.
Yeah.
So up to, I think, what did I say, 100?
I don't know.
Nobody painted 100
like
points in 6 weeks. But there were some people who really painted a lot. And then, yeah, so that'll be the raffle at the end.
It's nice because it takes away the contention of, you know, people arguing over who's winning games and stuff that we've had with previous journeyman games where people are complaining other dudes are farming – points and stuff.
Yeah. Well, and then there's also the like painting points. People the contention over that as well. Like, you know, one guy wants to win the painting award, so he just slap dashes 100 plus points worth of garbage, and it's like two colors and a wash, and that's it. Yeah. And if that's how people paint, that's fine. Like, I'm not bagging on that. It's painted. But yeah. There's clearly like a personality of people who will, like, to win a prize, will kind of go to that length, yeah. And it's kind of silly.
Even dumb down their own painting.
Yeah, so basically, you know, we tried to make it. I think raffles are the best way to do that kind of stuff. And we may, you know, we have to come up with some rules for it, and I'm going to be working on that this week, so we can get that going next week. But
yeah,
I think it's going to work out really well. And it's gone really well so far. And like I said, it's just cleverly disguised, you know, newbie flypaper. Just get them to stick and keep coming on Mondays. You know what I mean?
We've got a few new guys that are going to stick.
Yep. So we just got to do this maybe once or twice a year for 6 weeks to hook some new guys in.
Yeah.
The store has a huge Magic the Gathering base. Anybody who hasn't been to Gamers Gauntlet, which is probably a lot of people listening to this,
yeah,
it's an extremely large store, like 30-foot ceilings, and then how long is the store?
I don't know.
200, 300
It's an
feet?
Old warehouse.
Yeah, it is massive.
It's in like an industrial complex. Yeah. It's like, it could be a grocery store.
Yeah, it's pretty damn big. So they run extremely large Magic events. They're like one of the largest Magic event runners in the area. And, you know, Magic players sometimes transition into War Machines.
I think lots of Magic players transition to War Machine.
And they have to, the way the store's set up, they have to walk through the miniatures area to get to where they play Magic. So it's, you know, you see a lot of like watch, you know, like some eyes on the tables.
Head cranking.
Yeah. So we'll just keep hooking some of those guys and see if they stick.
So what else are we going to talk about today?
We got two kind of topics. One is the new errata/policy stuff from Privateer. It's been talked about a lot, and there's been a lot.
Let's not dwell on it hard, but let's talk about it a little bit.
There's been a tremendous amount of forum chat about it and stuff too, and a lot of it's just kind of nonsense, hyperbole as usual. But you know, we have our bit to say about it, I think. And then also the main topic we want to talk about today is a tournament prep and list prep kind of idea.
I think a tool.
Yeah, it's a tool that I think everybody has to generate for themselves, because I think ultimately you have to build this tool based around what you're worried about seeing.
It's something I think a lot of people already do to some degree, but maybe not in the analytical completeness that we're going to propose.
Like, this could be like a spreadsheet. And basically what we're talking about is creating a list of the list archetypes that you will see at tournaments, the things in the meta that are popular, and the things that that you can kind of go down the list and figure out what your lists cover, what they don't. And then at the very least, even if you don't cover all that, you have
you know what you can't cover.
Yeah, and I hate using the term.
There's a couple different ways
we
can dissect it once we put it together.
I agree. Yeah, but that's going to be the gist of that one. So that'll be the bulk of the podcast, but I guess let's talk about
the errata stuff.
Let's talk about the errata first, I think.
Yeah. So, I mean, we're talking about the unit errata, right?
Yeah, I mean, that's the only one that really matters. They errata.
What other errata was there?
They errata Pursuit.
Okay.
I think that was a reaction to the Denny 2, in my opinion. I think this happened because the Denny 2 theme force.
Where you can put the upkeeps on your opponent's stuff before you ever get to them?
Yeah, which allows her to essentially go first, run up the field, and then potentially you proc Pursuit, and then she's even further up the field, and then she feats on you, and then she auto wins on scenario. Which is like a very real possibility. Now, the errata to Pursuit doesn't really stop that from happening, but what it does stop is, if I recall correctly, and someone can correct me on this, I've skimmed the document basically, but it looked like they changed Pursuit to only proc when during a model's like movement.
It's not normal during, movement.
Correct, normal movement, right. Not during like sidesteps or refuges, etc. So Denny's not like getting five fucking full advances out of it or whatever.
Right.
So that was a thing. And maybe actually Pursuit does not expire. Okay, so yeah, she would get multiple advances. I think they wanted to stop that because that theme force is already kind of
really good.
Well, it's setting a weird precedent that when you're writing other rules you're not accounting for, and that can create a problem like Pursuit where all of a sudden you're like, oh shit. We didn't think about this, and now she's...
You're supposed to have to do something to get Pursuit on
At the beginning of her second turn, she's 37 inches up the table. What the fuck did we just do? You know, that's a thing that could happen.
Yeah.
Or whatever. I just pulled that number out of thin air, but you get what I'm saying.
Yep.
So that's that. Whatever. Nobody really cares that much about that. The main errata was the unit errata, and essentially,
which I know you're a big fan of.
I
think I am too.
Fan is a strong word.
Well, you think it's.
Let's just for a sec, just in case someone's been under a rock and they haven't heard about it.
Yeah.
Essentially, what it is, to just give you the gist, is if a unit has a model out of formation, or if a unit is not in formation, it cannot be targeted or chosen for buffs and spells. So like Rupert can't be like, hey, you guys are tough now.
And that's, to be clear, only friendly stuff.
Friendly stuff, correct. And it's deliberately friendly because otherwise you could just leave a model out of formation and then stop crippling grass.
Okay, let's see if we can lobby for that errata.
Yeah, right. So, I'm not... A fan is a strong word because I think it's clunky.
Well, why? What's clunky about it?
I think it creates nitpicky issues. Also, when you're allowed to check command, creates weird issues. Like, you can check command whenever it's pertinent, like something forces you to.
Yeah.
Or during the unit's activation, right? And you can only check from the leader to another model in the unit.
Right.
So this creates like an additional time that you can check that, which is when you're like, oh, I'm going to target this unit with a buff, right?
Mm-hmm.
Well, that if you go down the list of how that works, you spend focus as the first step.
Yeah.
Then you pick a target.
Yeah.
Then you check the command.
Okay.
So, whoops, he's out of command. I just spent this focus. I can't target that unit. Is there somebody else I can target within 6 inches? Nope. Gone. That's kind of clunky.
Yeah, but I think it's the only way to make the punishment, to make it a deal, you know? If it was like, oh, well, I guess I don't get to target them, I think that making somebody pay the cost is kind of
I mean, I think a lot important. Of people would argue that just not being able to buff a unit is pretty bad.
I don't know. I think it's time to rein in units a little bit on how far they can spread out, especially some of the big command ones.
Yep. I don't disagree with that, but I think the way this is applied does it in a clunky fashion.
Yeah, maybe.
It does it in a clunky fashion, and I think a good point was the Muse Unminis guys revile this change, and I'm not nearly – I don't feel nearly as strong as they do. But the one point that they made that was that it is exceptionally unfriendly to new players who occasionally do leave a model out of formation and just get punished.
I find that new players, at least when I was a new player, I bricked my units up like crazy.
Yeah. But if, I mean, this is like, you're playing
your... Keith should like this. It's better for Purge.
It's better. Oh, because there's units are clumped together.
Yeah.
It could be better for Purge. It also could be worse because you can't leave like actually, it doesn't matter. You don't throw any buffs on the... Yeah, Crix is, I don't want to say unaffected, but mostly unaffected. Ghostwalk was the big issue.
Yeah.
Leaving like one Mechanithral way back out of formation to make sure the unit doesn't die. And I think that mechanic, the I'm going to leave a dude way back...
For recursion, I don't think it's an issue.
It's not an issue for recursion. It's an issue for I want to Ghostwalk that unit, I want to Scything Touch that unit, et cetera, et cetera. The thing is, buffs are not like unilaterally... targeted or chosen, right? Like, Dark Guidance doesn't give a fuck.
Right.
So, that's the clunky part about it. It punishes in certain situations, and it doesn't really punish arguably the most infantry-heavy faction nearly as much as it punishes some of the other ones, where, like people, you know, troll players are a little upset. And, you know, to some extent, I agree, because they get the drummers that make their command bigger, right? But you pick that dude out, now the command suddenly shrinks by 3.
Yeah.
You almost have to just sort of, like,
protect your model like he's important?
But he can't hide in the very back. He has to be within 3 of the leader. And the leader's got to be the center of the constellation. Now, granted, that constellation is fucking huge, right? But I think the I'm going to get my leader sniped out, I'm going to get my drummer sniped out, that's a concern. The I'm going to get a dude to my unit TK'd out or other sort of boar control, Echelon Thexus or whatever the fuck he's called, the new Cephalix guy.
Yep.
That guy's going to be the... He's literally against a faction that does a lot of buffing. You're going to start your turn, and all 3 of your big units are going to be all out of formation.
Yeah.
And you're going to have to... You're going to just have to not have buffs. I'm talking about his feat turn.
Yeah.
And it's a feat, so okay. But it's a weird interaction.
Yeah.
So all that being said, devil's advocating against what you were saying, I do agree that Infantry Machine is still too strong.
Yeah.
AoE 3s, and even AoE 4s to some extent, are not powerful enough.
Yeah.
Mostly.
To call it, yeah, I agree.
And people abuse the shit out of these rules. To the extent... Like, this doesn't nerf Epic Morvana from keeping, like, a blood tracker back or a Skinwalker back all game for the feet. What it does stop her from doing is cycling Carnivore around like crazy.
Yeah.
Because that unit can't be targeted by Carnivore anymore. And that's kind of a deal, especially when she, if she purifies. It's definitely a deal. So it's a thing. It takes a little bit of the wind out of her sails, but not much.
No. I don't think that it's game-breaking for anyone.
Yeah. I personally
Although the internet might disagree.
The cleanest way to fix this, the only way to fix this, in my opinion, before they put this errata, I would have, if you had said they were going to do this, I would have said, that's too clunky, they'll never do it. What I've always felt like they should have done is, if you, at the end of a unit's activation, if you leave a model out of formation, he dies. It's just RFP, out of the game. The problem with that rule, which I think is probably the easiest problem to fix, is that there are Epic Denny feats and things like that, that you could literally, like, kill the leader. Now four guys are out of formation because you spread them out so far. And then that unit activates, and then those dudes just die. Or, like, stationary. Although stationary, the wording of stationary may apply to where they don't actually get an action activation, so there isn't an end. So maybe it doesn't apply. But anyway, it doesn't matter. That's not what they did. That's the one I always felt like, especially with undead, punishing them for abusing the command rules a lot.
Yeah.
I felt like that would have been the easiest fix. Also kind of brutal to new players.
Yep.
But not quite as gotcha-y, because it just happens. It's just like, whoops, left those dudes out of formation. They're just dead.
Yep.
That ranger ran out of formation to get Martha Target. Okay, Martha Target, you know, their activation's over. He just dies before he marks shit. You know, like, basically the idea is not that he's dead. It's just that the dude, in fluff terms, he's gotten so far to cohesion with his unit, he doesn't know where the fuck they went.
Yeah.
It's a battlefield. Shit's blowing up everywhere. He just hides in a hole until it's over.
Yeah.
You know?
I like it.
I don't like it.
I mean, it takes away some of the tactics that lots of people use, but that's kind of the point, right?
Yeah, it does. It unilaterally fixes command range abuse, which this errata doesn't do.
Right.
That being said, that's not the way they went, and they clearly want people to yes, you have a command range of 8.
Yeah.
You better not use all 8 of it in a lot of matchups.
Yeah.
Or you better create...
Or at least think about what could take things out of command or change your command bubble.
What's the new, you know, is the new Vogue now a command triangle where you have a triangle with the point facing your opponent and that's the unit leader and then two guys like within an inch of him, like a triangle?
Maybe.
You know, maybe not quite 3-inch AOE range, but like that's the new leader when you kill that guy.
Yeah, maybe.
So you don't lose it. The bubble doesn't shift very far until you kill at least all 3 of them. I think there's going to be some interesting new ways to play it. And I think in a lot of matchups, it doesn't matter at all. You know, against a person who doesn't have a lot of guns or you know, just ranged abilities to remove a leader. Or they don't have, you know, the board control of TK and whatnot. Maybe it's not as big a deal. We'll see. I'm not nearly as down on it as other people. I don't appreciate the clunkiness, but I don't know what else you do other than just the RFP guys who are out of formation thing. And even that is clunky in a way. I mean, there needs to be an instant errata to certain effects.
Yeah. So. I think it's all right. It's frustrating to see, like you said, all the hyperbole on the internet.
Well, you
people
know.
Just losing their minds about how this caster is garbage now or this unit is dog shit now.
Yeah.
It's so frustrating.
I definitely get a little frustrated because, you know...
God forbid you have to modify the playstyle you've been using since Mark 1.
Well, that's the thing, is there's being inflexible to change is a little frustrating. I also, you know... I think that the faction that has the most to complain about is Trolls, and I think the only unit that is really, really badly affected by this is a unit like Burrowers, who pretty much need buffs to do anything.
Yeah.
The thing about Burrowers... There's 6 points for 10 of them.
Yeah. And they wreck face.
Yeah.
I have no problems with any kind of nerf to burrowers, frankly.
And, you know, cluster them up.
Yep.
Cluster them up, burrow them, whatever you got to do.
They're invincible every other turn. Calm your tits.
Yeah, well, and then, you know, the turns that they're not, you're going to have to cluster them together and make them a little more vulnerable. And that sucks. I get it. But, like, it's not that hard to mitigate other than the you know, the... Like I said, the Cephalix casters of the world who are going to really fuck with your formation. I mean, they could basically put a 4-plus-inch gap in your formation by TKing. Well, they could... 6 inches, I guess.
Sturgis's feet is probably way better now. You get half of a unit, get their leader.
Yeah, maybe. You leave the back half out. Yeah. And again, this is only in factions that want to put a buff, an offensive buff on. Because defensive buffs, you don't give a shit. You're like, unit activates, does this thing, gets back in formation, boom.
Yep.
Additionally, just so everybody knows... and I see this pretty frequently, even with good players, if you leave a unit, a model out of command, and they're not fearless, you need to make a command check at -2 for that model, and then they are fleeing.
Yep. Who, people never do that.
I do it.
I know you do.
I don't know. Like, I see it just ignored, even on like high-level play, and I'm like, that ranger just ran out of formation. You got to, you know. I mean, and most of the time, that guy just dies.
Yeah.
Kind of doesn't matter.
Yeah.
But there are times it matters.
Sure.
So, that's that about errata. I don't think it's nearly as drastic as people are making out, and I think it does affect Infantry Machine a little bit, and I'm okay with that, mostly.
Yeah? Because you hate Infantry Machine.
No, I just think it's, like, Mark 1, you look at Mark 1 and you're like, you look at what's available for every faction, and there's like all these war jacks and all these awesome war beasts, and then you like look at the infantry, and you're like, oh, that's what people play. Yeah. Just that.
Can you imagine a time when there was no war jack points? I didn't play back then, but man.
See, listen, it was like sometimes a character jack. Basically, Lists in Mark 1 were, and I'm not a Mark 1 expert, so, you know, if this sounds wrong, feel free to correct
me. Sure, we'll get yelled at.
Mark 1 lists looked basically like your typical, like, Crix list. It was like a couple Arknotes and a lot of infantry,
yeah.
Or a warjack and a bunch of infantry. It's kind of, you know, like people play Kador now. It's similar. It's how, like, all the factions operated.
Yeah.
But whatever.
Do you think anybody played Deliverers back then?
Maybe.
Nah.
Not sure.
Nobody could have played Deliverers.
They might have been good. I don't remember. I know Zealots were like bonkers in Mark 1.
They're bonkers now.
They were base pal 14 up to 16 with Fervor, I think. Yeah, exactly.
Sweet. All right, so you want to get to the big meat?
No. I want to talk about the painting slash whatever IP law nonsense.
Oh, yeah.
And that I'm going to go by really quick. First off, if you're not an IP lawyer, shut up. Everybody shut up. Nobody knows what privateer, like why they did this. I think a good hypothesis is that they probably got a letter from somebody.
Yeah.
Like, hey.
Well, we were talking about this earlier. You said, like, GW likes to just spam letters.
Yeah, they do. And entering a legal battle with another company is like, there's no profit for either company.
No.
And that's the problem with the legal system when it comes to that is that bigger companies can bully around smaller that way.
Yep.
That being said, I think it's too broad, it's clunky, and it really stifles creativity. And I just, like, I don't want to see Star Wars themed or machine armies. I don't want to see Iron Man. I don't want to see Incredible Hulk. I don't want to see all that other shit. But it is perfectly your right to do that to your models.
Yeah.
You know, Privateer did have a collectible miniatures game where everything came pre-painted. Everything was...
We're talking about Monpok here?
Yeah.
Okay.
You could recognize everything on the table in a glance.
Okay.
If that's the world we want to live in, then let's do that. Let's play HeroClix on a table.
Yeah.
But
that's normally where HeroClix is played.
Yeah. No, you know what I mean. A battlefield with hills and terrain. Fuck, I don't even need to make the terrain. I'll just buy it.
Yeah.
And we'll have hills that all look identical. And buildings that all look identical, right?
Yeah.
I think that's if you stifle creativity to some extent, I think the question becomes, why am I buying models? Which, as soon as I buy a pile of parts and turn it into my thing, it's my fucking thing.
Yeah.
Right? And you know, a lot of people argue like, oh, well, you know, these big conversions, you can't recognize things, etc. I've had trouble recognizing models just that they're reposed. Like, oh, I took Mullikarn and I just like moved his arms around a lot and like changed the positioning of his legs and made his head turn the other way. It's just Mullikarn plus green stuff. There's no GW parts. There's nothing.
Yeah.
People like would double take at it. Like, what the fuck is that?
Right? Yeah.
You got to deal with that. That's just, you have to adapt to what's on the table. And obviously there's, in tournaments, there's arguments that if you put a bunch of weird shit down that nobody knows.
There's deception or whatever.
Yeah, right. I think the problem here lies in just...
It's kind of like the problem of pornography. It's like, when is it going too far? And it's one of those things where you'll know it if you see it.
Yeah, well, isn't that like the
famous,
famous quote the congressman said?
Yeah.
I don't know how to define it, but I know it when I see it.
Yeah, exactly.
That's sort of
that's kind of what it seems like. You know, that's the problem with trying to put a definition on it that they can hold you to the letter of the law, and they may have gone a little overboard. I mean, especially when they're talking about like paint schemes. that are like I don't know what that even means.
Well, they pretty much said a paint scheme. If you wanted to paint your team or your army in the Seahawks color scheme, you're fine. If you put Seahawks logos on all their shields, now you're not fine.
Yeah.
And when you have to lay it out that in broad strokes, like this is good, this is bad, and try to cover everything, typically speaking, you have to kind of go overboard rather than you know. So I get it. I get they had to do it probably for some reason. The interesting thing about it is it doesn't address the fact that people could basically take, here's a privateer model, I'm using 50% of it, which is completely subjective of what 50% means, right?
Yeah.
Here's a 50% of this model, and then I'm just sticking GW Tyranid legs on the bottom of it, right?
Yeah.
The errata doesn't, or this policy doesn't really stop you from doing that.
I believe it does. It says something about competitors' parts.
IP. That's it. Doesn't say anything about parts.
Oh, really?
So it says, again, I did not, like, I literally didn't put it down and grab a highlighter and highlight everything. So
right.
Maybe I'm missing something. But my understanding is that it is, parts are not a problem. IP is a problem.
So if you're like the Tyranid symbol or whatever is the issue.
Yeah, or you like create a Legion model that looks, you know, it has like, looks just like a Tyranid, whatever, Carnifex or something, right? And it has the exact same like positioning and the same arms, and it's like clearly trying to look like that. Then maybe you have an IP issue as well. But the just using parts from other model ranges doesn't seem to be included in this, which is weird because that was sort of my understanding is that's kind of what started some of this topic. Is that like Jeremy from Crippled System had a Legion model with some Tyranid parts on it, which did not look like a specifically like a certain Tyranid model. It just was like these are.
Was that that rape snake that I was talking about?
Yeah, it had like bug legs on it or whatever. Yeah, whatever. The afflicter.
Yeah, the rape snake.
Such a stupid name.
Sorry, man.
Sorry.
NCPS.
That's stupid too. Who cares?
So, man, you're salty tonight.
I don't know. I'm like. When I think about this, I get a little frustrated because I think there are a lot of players who get into this game because it is a model hobby game.
Yeah.
And there's a hobby aspect, like an art aspect to it and a game aspect to it.
I feel bad for dudes that have, you know, like that dude that has the Crix army that is all Necrons.
Yeah. I mean, and again, there's a point where you probably have to accept that, like, in an official event, sort of format that is like pretty clear on the black and white scale of things, like, oh, well, that's an issue for IP
because
you're like using all their iconography, you're using a ton of their parts. Are they going to print your shit in No Quarter or put it on their website? Probably not.
Right.
But the whole just I'm going to ban it from privateer official events, and that's another thing that I'm not clear on. Maybe somebody out there can answer.
What's
this
a privateer official event?
Yeah, my understanding, if you go on the forums, official events, there's a bunch of official events that are local events. It just means they have like a steamroller pack and it's run by a PG.
Yeah.
Yeah. Now, any local TO who enforces this is a dick.
Yeah, I wouldn't enforce this.
No, it's stupid. But yeah. So,
but I'm not a PG, so.
Yeah, well. Your PG-dom is a phone call away. You're just too lazy to do it. So, I don't know. I don't have anything else on that. I think the errata was a interesting decision that I have not 100% yay or nay on, but I think it was an interesting move, and people are going to have to adjust.
Yeah.
I think this painting situation is, or this modeling change is pretty much 98% a bad call.
Yeah,
I think you
maybe.
Could just say something like, privateer will not display your models if they infringe on another IP. If we determine that they infringe on another IP, and that includes us recording them, or putting them in No Quarter, or putting them on our website. And I think if it's just that, that's fine. But maybe they don't want to end up in a position where they're like, oh, it's the Iron Gauntlet Finals, and we are streaming this to the world, and everybody wants it. And then they're like, oh, that dude's army is IP infringing, so we're just not streaming it now.
Yeah.
That. Maybe that's the situation they want to avoid by blanket banning everybody from bringing this stuff. But, you know, it only affects the top two players in that event. That they might be recording, but probably aren't. I mean, they don't record that many events other than IG.
Well, and, you know, I guess this brings to a point, you know, talk to the people that run events in your area. Or if you're not planning on going to Lock and Load and winning it, fucking do what you want with your army.
Yeah, I think ultimately, I think people need to understand do what you want with your army is still the way to do it. I guess what my fear, though, is that this kind of stuff, like when newer players come in and they're like, oh, I got all these awesome ideas. And then just Joe Blow is like, oh, hey, man, just so you know. if you go to like an official event, you can't play.
Yeah.
And it's, you know, and then they're like, oh, well, then never mind. I'm not going to do that. I'm not going to do that cool idea. And maybe I'm not even going to play this game because that's weird, you know? And, I'm kind of parroting what I think Muse said a little bit to some extent, but I feel pretty strongly about it. I think it's pretty heavy-handed. So it's a bummer that we just live in a world where, like, a company has to do that.
Yeah.
My little toy mans that I play with are now on a video somewhere, and the person streaming the video can get sued somehow.
Yeah.
Or, like, well, get cease and desist
letters.
Let's just
remember who the bad guy is in this picture.
I don't know who the bad guys are in this picture.
We know who the bad guys are.
I don't think this is. It could. I could be wrong, but I don't think this is specifically GW driven.
You don't think so?
I don't think so. I could be wrong though. I mean, it wouldn't surprise me.
Yeah, I don't know who else would do it.
Yeah.
Who else's stuff is getting used to?
I have no idea.
Modify, you know.
I guess the way I look at
it isn't a parts company that's like making aftermarket parts on purpose.
I will say this: that like, if it is GW driven, like GW sent them, you know, some legal stuff, and they had to respond to it. It's a bummer because that makes. This whole discussion that's happening, this whole IP discussion, is basically what GW players have gone through for years with, like, GW slinging cease and desist letters around everybody and just kind of being dicks, right?
Yeah.
Trying to, like, protect their IP to a point of kind of, you know, absurdity.
Mm-hmm.
You know, shutting down fan-run websites, things like that, because they used, like, a symbol, right?
Yeah.
You know, like our stupid Warman's logo, which is MS Paint on top of the War Machine logo, like that would get us shut down by a GW. Or not shut down, but we'd get a letter.
Yeah, we really do need to make that logo different.
Yeah, we do. We're working on it.
Should we crowdsource that?
No.
No? Okay.
So, I don't know. If anyone's got some really good ideas, let us know. So never mind. I'm sure, crowdsource it.
Sweet.
By crowdsource, I mean if anyone's got a really good idea, we'll use it, but, you know.
Yeah. Send us a rights-free document. I don't want to hear cease and desist.
Right. For every episode you use this logo, you have to pay us 20 cents. Well, the point I was getting at was that if it is GW-driven, then GW has basically dragged Privateer down into the muck of like where they're at and how their fans feel. Because this is this is how like Warhammer fans feel sometimes. When it's like, oh, the company that I like give a lot of money to play their game is like dicking over a fan website that I really like.
Yeah.
I'm really upset about this.
Yeah.
This is kind of a similar feeling, and I hope this is like one of the only times Privateer Press players have to feel this way and have to get into this whole like, let's discuss IP law with other fucking keyboard cowboys who know nothing about IP law all day. Awesome.
Yeah.
Like I just basically just avoided the internet for the last week.
Let's just have a cloud over our heads.
Yeah, right. It's so stupid. I started a thread on the Muse forums called Kumbaya, and it's basically just all like cat gifs and fun stories about assassinating people with swamp gobbers. It's pretty good, actually.
Nice.
Avoid the internet other than that thread, is what I'm saying.
Okay.
Go to my thread.
All right, so let's lighten it up and get to that last meaty topic.
Okay. So I'm going to give you the list right now, and I'm going to have you kind of get rolling with them.
So while he's digging that up, we were sitting at lunch like we do all the time. I think it was at National Coney Island.
Yep.
Delicious food, friendly waitresses.
I enjoy eggs out of a bag, like eggs that come as a powder form.
I don't think those eggs came as a powder form.
I don't know, man.
I mean, I get them over easy or over medium. They don't look like they came out of a bag.
Okay.
Unless there's some kind of crazy trickery.
There could be.
But what we talked about doing is laying out like a formal tool that could be used to figure out your pairings.
And I would say that the tool is sort of custom to you.
Yeah.
So you don't, you know, this is not like a, hey, we're going to make a spreadsheet and throw it on the internet and everybody can use it. But this is more like a, you should build this tool based on what you find pertinent to your interests and what you experience in your local meta. Maybe you don't go to cons, maybe your local meta is dominated by five list archetypes that kick the shit out of everybody else.
Yeah. And we sort of, you know, I don't think that all of this is represented in our local meta either, but we still came up with like as much stuff as we could come up with. It could be a legit line on this spreadsheet.
Yeah, this is like national meta stuff. And there's stuff we've missed. And I think as far as just what, like listeners, hit us up on Twitter. It's at Warman's Podcast, facebook.com/Warman's Podcast. If you've got any ideas about these archetypes, like we're kind of trying to come up with an idea of a master list, but also not a list that's like 100 lists. And it's, we're trying to like jam similar things together to create, you know, this is a genre of a type of list, not this specific caster, this specific model. We don't want to get that granular if we can. I think some lists, some casters just create their own genre.
Yeah, there's a few casters that are just their own.
Yeah, like does anybody operate archetype. on the same level as like Morvana 2, where you could be like, oh, this covers Morvana 2 and this other thing in a similar fashion. I mean, maybe. Yeah,
maybe.
Maybe Thagarash 1, maybe a little.
And I don't know, the way I envision this list being used, you can certainly just put X's next to both of those lists if your list deals with both of those things.
Things you need RFP for, etc. So,
but anyway. Let's maybe just, I'll plow through these lists real quick.
Yes, yeah,
and we'll stop if there's anything that you think should be clarified and what we mean.
Okay, and we can add to it as well. I don't know if this list is
if we come up with anything else, we'll add it on the spot. But then maybe we'll talk about how we can use the proposed gauntlet to come up with list pairings. Okay. Sound good?
I think it's a good idea.
All right, so top list, Morvana 2, medium base spam.
Yeah, and that actually, you know, we just mentioned that. I don't know if anything else really quite fits in because there, I can't think of other casters that operate, that do the same stuff that Morvana does.
Yeah.
All, which is backed by purification.
Mm-hmm.
To, and then also have a feat where they bring back a ton of full health dudes.
Yeah. That's why she has her own line item.
So we want to, like, we want a line item and then maybe talk about a quick answer.
Yeah, I think that could be okay.
Okay.
Yeah, things that maybe you want to, like, elements of your list to be able to put a check mark next to that one as, like, yeah, I got that covered.
Yeah.
So first thing that comes to mind for me is RFP with Morvana.
Yeah, RFP.
Threatening guns.
Yep. Guns to threaten her so she can't just willy-nilly cut down to one health every turn and then try to heal it back. And then, you know,
yeah,
like if she's feeding down to one health or sub, you know, less than five health, you need to be able to threaten her with death. To make sure the other player can't do that necessarily.
Yeah.
Can't reroll every single damn roll every turn.
Yeah.
I also think, just as a general answer to her, she struggles pretty hard against armor.
Does she?
Yeah.
I mean, she can't handle that with particular infantry?
No.
Yeah, Carnivore's only Matt, right?
You think, like, Skinwalkers, Blood Trackers, or Blood Pack, or Reeves of Orboros, any of those deal with...
I don't know. It just seems like putting a good Warwolf is brutal. Yeah,
no. One Warwolf Stalker does not erase two units of Warriors. It doesn't, seriously.
No, I believe.
And also her Stalker is usually a late game piece that just hangs around and doesn't do much because sometimes late game you can't kill their caster or you need to counterpunch a heavy that came in to kill some of your medium base stuff. It's not really a trade piece because then there's nothing to clean up.
Yeah, you know,
there's not a second piece after the, you know, unless you're playing a double stalker build with her, then maybe it's a little different. But I think the net list is a lot of medium based dudes, maybe blood trackers, maybe Reeves, etc.
Yeah.
Also, maybe having a caster that's fairly resistant to getting one shot by a Warwolf charge from the Reeves, like that whole list.
Yeah, the dogpile thing.
Yeah, yeah. But that's getting too granular. I think RFP. Yeah. Threaten her with ranged attacks of some fashion.
All right, next one. Runes of War / Beast Bricks. So I think we're talking about Beast Bricks that defy or depend heavily on a pile of spells and animi and positioning.
Yep.
So TK.
I think Thagarash 1 fits into this category a bit too. It doesn't play the same as Runes of War, but his brick is ultimately extremely resilient because it relies on animus-based armor buffs.
Yep.
And you've got a recursion mechanic as well. Not that Runes has that, but the recursion mechanic makes it, it's like arguably as hard to chew through Thagarash's four heavies as it is to Runes's three or four heavies, whatever they run.
Right.
Runes's.
Yeah. So TK, purification.
Purification's a big one. I think
fast enough stuff to flank that brick.
Yeah. I think when you talk about anything dropping a wall, speed is a thing. Any kind of time walk feat is not bad because a lot of times he time walks you with his feet. Talking about
Runes of War?
Yeah, Runes of War specifically. I would say RFP against any kind of beast heavy list is not bad. But Runes of War is a very balanced list. I think you got to be able to crack armor.
Yeah.
If you're able to crack armor, I think you have to be able to threaten the caster with death enough that he maybe isn't just camping one every turn.
Yeah. To maintain the, like, web of spells and animi.
And upkeep and animi removal.
super big deal.
And spot removal, maybe get rid of Janissa slash other pieces that are important. You know, yep. Against maybe Thagarosh, it's like the you're killing the Furious.
Maybe Banishment. Guns that ignore line of sight.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay. So heavy missiles like Mullet Karn missile or Mulg missile, where we're talking about insane threat ranges.
Yeah.
Where you're going to have to receive some kind of charge or maybe even a jank walk with Mullet.
I think having proper screening and having tough screening units is a big deal. When I think of those yep. lists and I think
tough,
about what
tough is a big deal.
What trips those up, I think like Boomhauers. Like what does Doomy 2 do against Boomhauers? He like charges in and tries to goad and then they tough a bunch of times and then it's not great.
Yep.
You can't trample over them. You know, it's a pretty good answer.
A bigger footprint on your army.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe backline casters.
Yep. And then, you know, against all beast heavy lists, whether it's a missile style like a Makeda 2 or a more of a brick style, reach weapon masters typically.
Yeah, make them pay for free strikes.
Well, and you know, and just to kill heavies, you know, especially against the troll brick where there's a wall. Reach is just super pertinent on weapon masters, in my opinion. Blessed yeah. weapon masters like Bastions are really fucking good against a lot of those lists.
Yeah.
Purification, though.
Maybe some feats. Feats or spells that prevent charges.
Or control in general. Yeah, yeah. Preventing charging is really good against some of the missiles, not all of them. Makeda 1 comes to mind as the one that it doesn't work well against because Savagery is just a fucking walk.
Yeah. Holy shit.
It's a long walk. But against anything that relies on charging, you know, polarity field type effects are really
yeah.
good.
Okay. Butcher 3, just... Butcher 3.
I don't know if anybody quite fits the same. I think maybe Striker 2 might fit in that same category because a lot of times Butcher 3, his threat range is often predicated on this 5-inch I pull all your shit in, right?
Yep.
And then I flashing blade a bunch of times. And
the terrifying thing.
Yeah, that too. But that's a spell, right? So the stuff that works, it is definitely
it's like
a
everything
spell.
In within 5 or something?
Yeah. That spell... He's way up the field. So things like the Covenant of Menoth, Druids, or Midwinter, etc.
Yep.
Those pieces really can shut down a lot of his threat. I mean, his threat's still very long, especially if you proc the Vengeance on the dogs like a dummy or something like that.
Yep.
Striker 2 is in a similar way. Striker 2, a lot of times, because of his non-linear threat range, that's 17 inches. It's not far off from Butcher's. A lot of times he has to, like, charge and then use the Energizer?
No, he has Velocity,
doesn't
he?
Thank you, yeah. Charge Velocity rather than Velocity Charge.
Yeah.
It's usually better if you're going to hook, if you've got, like, one turn on your threat range, usually turning at the end is better than turning at the beginning.
Yeah.
That's typically the easier way to get to models that are, like, behind other things.
Uh-huh.
Well, the same anti-spell stuff applies.
Yep.
And
it takes the charge out of it, too.
Even maybe to some extent... I wouldn't put Lich 2 in this category, but Lich 2 coming up, doing a bunch of shit,
yeah.
and then teleporting back.
Having a good no spell bubble is definitely good against. He's on the list, so he'll come up.
But yeah, I think Butcher 3, spell hate, or control, no anti-charging.
Specifically proximity spell hate.
Yeah. Proximity spell hate, yeah. Things like rebuke or other sorts of like unit shutdown stuff. What's Harvey's spell?
Fear God.
Fear God, because he's a unit.
Yeah,
stuff like that.
That's true.
Although, you know...
Running around with Dahlia.
Yeah, that's a thing that some genius came up with.
Yeah.
And I think that is its own category. Again, maybe Striker 2 lies in there a little of that kind of list where there's a melee monster that is using a spell to get to you.
Yeah.
I'm trying to think.
And Flashing Blade is the spell when he gets there, too.
Correct, yeah. But he could just... I mean, you could still just buy attacks. So that's yeah. like... If it's just like
yeah, that's
he's going to kill my caster, then okay.
Yeah,
but it does stop him from like pulling
murdering entire units,
right? Or like pulling in two heavies that are like next to him, you know, 4 inches apart from each other or six
yeah.
inches apart from each other, and he's just like killing
yeah.
both.
fuck him.
Yeah, he's a monster.
All right. Next one on the list is Miserable Meat Mountains.
Yeah.
So I mean, we're talking double warders with high armor.
Yeah, that's like, I mean that's the epic risk.
So unbuffed double warders.
Yeah, the Epic Crystal, the Jarls, the Epic Madrak, maybe. I mean,
things that speed up those.
That's typically... Either there's a wave of like skirmishing infantry in front of it, and then the warders come in behind late game, or the warders are the front line and they're sped up by something.
Yeah.
And either way, warders, even with all the speed buffs in faction, are not blistering fast.
Remember when people used to complain about warders? Like troll players complained about warders when they were first spoiled?
Yeah.
Holy shit.
I think trolls, I get why troll players are still, they kind of are mopey, because they're a faction that is difficult to play and also has like a... They get a lot of players who maybe are not as willing to put the mileage in to find the gold in that faction, right?
Yeah, I guess.
They have some good shit.
Those tools, man, when people play them right.
Yep.
No, anyway.
They're good.
That's off topic. What crushes trolls? Anti-tough, armor piercing?
I actually think the meat mountain, the tough is like just the icing on the cake.
Yeah.
Like when you get through a warder and you're like, yeah, I killed a warder, and then they tough, you're like, oh my god, kill me. But it's not really the tough check that's driving you crazy at that point. It's the fact that you just got through 8 armor 21 or even higher wounds. You gotta hit like a truck.
Yep.
And you have to have some element of either rope-a-dope, like I hit you and back up, I hit you and back up, I hit you and back up, or you have to have board control feeds slash other
board control feed, I think, is slowing those guys down anymore is really the only way.
Anything also, it's hard to do, but removing the krill stone or you know, like the krill stone, let's say the stone itself is in a spot and then there's like 2 guys within 3 and then the rest of the unit is sort of behind.
Mm-hmm.
If you can kill those front 3 guys, because you kill the stone, then it takes up, and you kill it, then it takes up, then the stone's turned off for a turn.
Yep.
If you've got the tools to do that fairly reliably, that's pretty good.
Yeah.
You know, like a Pecane feat can do that, right?
Yeah.
Granted, the rest of Pecane's army can't fucking kill warders, but you killed the krill stone at least. I don't know. I think I think of like Veil One, who can like hit you really fucking hard, back up, hit you really fucking hard.
Maybe some Kaya yo-yos.
Kaya too, yeah, maybe. She sometimes has fury management issues, but I think that's a thing, maybe. She can hit pretty hard.
I used to think that like heavy gun lines, like maybe Ossian gun line could do it, but I don't think that anymore.
I think Red has a huge problem with those lists.
I
think you're probably better off with things like Griffin spam or Sentinel spam.
Spam, I think, is probably the way to go. Sentinel's charging spam, can probably crack those.
You're going to Alpha it for sure, and you're going to kill a lot of dudes. So that's why I think Krix is pretty good against that, although... You know, well-played trolls can overcome Krix a lot of times, but it's definitely, that's their primary bad matchup, is because there's a bunch of fast weapon masters coming at you.
Right. Speaking of Krix, the next one is Undead Recursion Light Infantry Spam.
Yeah. I don't see it nearly as often as I used to, although Jarek's been playing it a little bit. You know, you look at like those Peace Scar lists that have like 20 or 30 Mechanithralls, and then they're backed by Necrosurgeons.
Uh-huh.
Or you see maybe a P-Denny list with like...
I saw a bunch of that shit added up to Command.
Yeah. Well, you know, we live in a fantasy land.
Where there's no Krix players.
Yeah, the trees are made out of candy canes, and there's no P-Denny.
Yeah. So like, well, there
the
is now.
The amount of Epic Iris that makes it into our lists is hilariously low. Like, we see an Epic Iris, like, one dude might have it in one list out of like... 10 or 15 players on a Monday night.
Yeah.
And now it's like, oh shit, everyone's like dusting off their Epic Irises here, you know? It's just, it's a thing. I think you have to play a faction, or you have to have a list that can RFP a ton.
Yeah.
Or...
I wish RFP was a little more common than it is.
Or just mass remove so many that you kind of can play through it.
Yeah.
Like, oh, I killed 9 Mechanithralls out of that unit. All right. Bring back 3, it's cool.
Yeah, you need to overwhelm the Necrosurgeons or pluck the Necrosurgeons out.
It's really kill the Stitch Thralls, because the Necrosurgeons are almost always good players playing way back.
Yeah.
And then the Mechanithral unit that they keep adding to becomes a late game piece, usually.
Yep.
So if you can kill the Stitches, you're in good shape. And the Stitches can be out of command the whole game.
Yeah.
One thing I will say about that, and this is like an addendum a little bit, just so if people are abusing this against you, you cannot, as far as I'm aware... I always say this when I don't have a rule book in front of me, but let's say on your turn you activate your Necrosurgeon and Stitch Thralls and the unit runs and the Necrosurgeon stays way back and the Stitch Thralls go way forward, way out of command, like 15 inches away, right?
Yeah.
Legal. They're undead, so they don't have to make that command check.
Yep.
Everything still works. They still collect corpses because it does not say...
They can't run again if that's where you're going with this.
Right. The next turn, the only place those Stitches are going is backwards or staying where they are. And I've seen players just, well, this unit runs again, and then they just, you know, they continue to get further out of formation, and that's just not legal. And I think, like, there's already, like, to command abuse, I don't talk about, like, spirit of the game or anything like that.
Yeah.
To just basically to use that rule to your advantage is one thing. To then cheat on top of it is a frustrating thing to deal with as the other guy on the other side.
Let's change that from cheat to not know better. I think that's the spirit of it most of the time.
Inadvertent cheating. Yeah.
You got to be in formation to get an order.
Well, and just that before the unit activates, models out of formation have to either, before like the rest of the unit does anything, they have to either walk or run towards the leader.
Mm-hmm.
It's a run directly towards or a walk towards, I believe is how it's worded. So just that, and then they're done, and then the unit activates. So then they're not getting, and then you're right, they're not getting the order either. So it's a double win. But they couldn't even just walk forward is what I'm saying.
Yeah.
They were going backwards or not at all.
Correct.
Anyway, remove stitch trawls, remove recursion pieces in general. Another weirdly enough, it's not a light infantry recursion, but the fucking pot. You've got range attacks that can get rid of that pot. Like, if you're playing Menoth and you're like, I got boostable POW 15s coming out of my ass, kill that fucking pot.
Yeah. Yeah.
Or, like, murder all the lunch ladies and make it move really slow at least. Although, killing the lunch ladies just gave them, like, a free...
Yeah, just gives them a free beast.
Have a free stinger, or whatever.
Or Enigma Foundries are so brutal.
Yep. Yeah, similar thing. They're much like the pot as far as defensive stats. They're very hard to remove.
Yeah, well, the good thing for opponents of Enigma Foundries is they're a large base. And there's not a lot of stuff to screen them.
Yeah.
You do have some shield guards. There's some lists where there's a lot of shield guarding.
Yeah, I think those... and we can talk about that light infantry spam thing. Is Conversions has some lists. I haven't seen one, really, but where they run... What's the Axis theme that we talked about?
Axis theme with, like, triple or quadruple Enigma Foundries?
Yeah, and then a shitload.
Like, three full units of light, or small base infantry?
Yeah, obstructors and reductors, right? Those names, right?
Yeah.
Getting there. Anyway.
Obstructors and reductors, you said, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think you gotta realize that there's a point, like, can I cause massive damage to this unit? If not, don't attack. Like, I did this too in a game versus Gabe the other day, is I was just like, I'm gonna, you know, my blood pack are gonna assault and battery this unit, and I killed like four dudes, and then my blood pack are now engaged by them, and then he's like, bring back three of them, and all your blood pack are dead.
Definitely look at what the benefits are going to be when they recur.
Yeah,
and maybe that's not what you should be focusing on right now.
No, I think you gotta try to remove the recursion piece, or you're just like, no, I'm going to kill seven in that.
Yeah, if you're not going to kill the whole unit, then.
Yeah. You got to kill significantly more than they can bring back to make it worth your
while. So that one's kind of more of a playstyle rather than list build.
Well, I think, you know,
RFP is also good. God, RFP key just keeps coming up, doesn't it?
Yeah. Well, there's a lot of recursion in this game now. I think if you've got some factions have the range removal tools to kill like a stitch troll.
Yeah.
But they don't necessarily play them. You know, like you could say like Scorn or Trolls, like have a couple range pieces to get out there.
Yeah.
Rid of those things, you know, if you can.
All right, let's see. Weapon Master spam.
Board control.
So, yeah, we're talking about Banes.
Board control and a lot of guns.
Maybe some select Menoth lists.
You're saying Weapon Master spam. Yeah.
Yeah, examples
like
of
Testament.
It.
That's a recursion Weapon Master spam, which is pretty sweet.
Yeah.
Warshade 2, similar idea. Bring a bunch of weapon masters that keep coming back, or you make more of them with Tartarus and etc.
Stupid cricks. Yeah, board control. It's this, you know, the things that are good against most infantry machine.
Board control and applicable guns, and don't bring 60% of your
don't
list
bring of a, yeah exactly higher model count with some chaff.
Yeah,
definitely helps. Put a screening unit out there that costs 6 points instead of one, you know, vanguarding your army with a heavy with reach.
Yep.
Probably leave your Colossal on the tray if you can.
Anything that can generate multiple attacks. You know, some of the stuff that things like
stuff that slings big templates.
Yeah, things that have quick work, things that have sprays, things that, you know.
Things that can put up Razor Wall,
mm-hmm.
Harby's Feet. shit, it's the unavoidable damage that involves them, you know, not being able to do what they do best, which is usually run forward.
And you can pretty much apply this to like non-recursion Crix lists, same thing.
Yeah, and not just Crix, but
yeah, like we said, Weapon Master spam and Menoth, Weapon you know, Doom Reaver spam.
Yeah, well, Doom Reaver spam is actually part of the next one, which is command check spam. So things, stuff that has a lot of terror causing entities.
Yep,
terror and abomination.
And that's just. That almost just forces you to build your lists well.
Yeah.
You know, I remember when I first started playing Signar, I like never brought Rupert ever. The Stormblade Captain wasn't out then, although that guy is awesome. You got to look in your faction and see if you've got a legit command problem like Mercs, like Signar, like
some faction. Trolls, like Digmies.
Yeah.
Digmies have a serious command problem.
You got to look for those like Command 9 and Command 10.
Well, not the same.
Yeah, no,
they have a command problem, but it's not the same problem. Sorry,
no, not a command check problem.
Yeah.
And some of the same stuff applies. Is like board control can help slow them down from like running. Like you could literally take a unit of Doom Reavers and force like four abomination checks on like four separate things, right?
Yeah,
just by running that unit in formation into a bunch of shit.
Yeah,
it's really bad. So you got to be ready. And you know, I'm not saying every list can be immune to command. But having a command fixer, like a
having spell, something to rally your guys so they're not wasting their activation is a big deal.
A fearless spell like Inviolable Resolve is really good.
Yep.
You know, the Ruperts and the Runewoods of the world, mm-hmm. those sorts of fixers.
There's a lot of Merc fixers, or you know, bringing stuff that's undead.
Yep.
Witch Dot Croc is available for hordes now.
Yep, that helps a lot. I think too that Mercs especially have an issue where they can make a list or two, maybe not too invincible to. Command checks, and then they have a real big problem with the third list, or maybe the second list. I think some of the new options now, some of the, you know, maybe you play Pirates as one list, maybe you play Cephalix as one list, maybe you play Dwarves that are, like, super jack-heavy and there's just not a lot of command issues, you know? I don't know. I think that you gotta really be cognizant of it, of knowing whether your faction has a command check problem or not.
Oh, living Weapon Master spam, so it sort of takes away from Crix, but it's you know, similar to what we just talked about, but it adds a few other tools.
It, generally speaking, is much easier to deal with because there are a lot of things that proc off of living that are good for the attacker and bad for the model that's living.
Yeah.
It's like never an advantage. So
Basically,
if you can handle undead Weapon Master spam then or construct Weapon Master spam, then you can probably deal with living just fine the same way.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe better.
I agree. High def infantry spam, which seems to be going out of style, but that's like more the Kator style.
Yeah, I mean, you know, the Iron Flesh is a thing, and even just like, you know, Nis Hunters with Rupert on them, that's a 16. I mean, there's some stuff that can get up there. The real thing that you got to think about is it high defense, low armor? And I think that's
usually the implied.
Light infantry, obviously, you know, it's well documented. The chain lightnings, the AoEs, the board control templates are all super applicable to that and really have taken the sting out of, like, Kayazi Assassins, which used to be, like, one of the best units in the game, and now you barely ever see him anymore.
Right.
But it doesn't mean at a local tournament someone's not going to be like, you know what?
Someone's just going to pull them out of the coffers and crush everyone.
I'm going to meta the field.
Yeah, the field has gotten lax on it.
Well, and let's not kid ourselves. Kayazi Assassins are still pretty good, and Wintergard Death Star is still really fucking good.
Yeah.
Like, that unit is still just fine. Yeah, there's stuff that removes them. There's silver bullets, but it's still this huge cloud of, like, 15 dudes for not a lot of points that murders everything.
But it's still something to consider for your...
I think you need to be aware of it. Whether you cover it or not, whether it's as high of a priority to cover as some of the other stuff, I don't know, but it does exist.
Yep. All right. 4+ tough gym. So I think we all know what we're talking about there.
Pirates or Boomhallers.
Yep.
I think the pirates are significantly worse because they're so much faster.
They're so much faster and there's so many more of them.
Yeah. You could even maybe apply this to like a Terminus, like just I jam you with my whole undead army. That's tough. Kind of, you know, anything with
I think you know, Raider spam or Raider jam stuff. Any or Halberdier jam.
But they're not
all.
They're not tough.
They're not tough, but it's still. I think a lot of the same stuff is going to solve the problem.
Comes down to faction more than I think it comes down to list building. There are certain factions that, like, Signar has no tough removal.
Yeah. The good thing about the pirates and the Satixis, though, is they're trampleable.
Yeah, it's true.
So you can kind of clear things out with that.
So I think maybe you make a list where you're like, this list can unjam itself better than my other list.
Yeah.
And then you can look at your opponent's list and be like, well, those are pretty jammy. Let me, you know.
Things like, well, there's still like out of activation attacks, like ancillary attack, things like that can help.
Yeah, like a strike or 2 feet where basically all your infantry models probably kill.
Or Madrak 2.
Infantry model. Yeah, Madrak 2.
I certainly wouldn't be jamming into that.
Or Madrak 1 even. He just crushers and like removes the entire jamming unit.
Maybe.
Anything, any kind of attack multiplier is very good against that. And just, you know, you got to write a list that you're not going to auto lose on scenario because you got jammed and you went second.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, those ones you definitely need to have a plan for when you see them on the other side. Gatorman delivery systems. That one is close to your heart.
Well, if you look at the minions, and whether or not you want to attack for minions is probably based on your local meta. Even at a big event, I don't know if you want to attack against minions. I mean, I guess if you've got everything else covered and you're like, oh, I might hit minions, let me cover this.
Yeah.
That being said, I mean, Rask is top tier. Like, that dude's amazing.
Yeah, well, also, Gatormen make it into stuff that's not minions.
Yeah, that's true.
Fairly often.
That's true. And you could even say that this is, like, delivery system for...
A tuned-up 5-man medium base 8-wound unit.
Yeah, and I think the reason why Gatormen are sort of standalone is they've got multiple attacks. They can get the rerolls, they can get... You know, they can get the...
And they're kind of OG. They've been doing it for a while.
Well, and they're good. They're just cheap.
They're just fucking good.
They do, yeah.
But you're talking about period gator men behind Rask.
Yeah, and I'm also talking about maybe like Malok, because he just bricks them up so hard that you just... And then revives the ones you kill.
Yeah.
That you're
God, I love
like,
Malok.
You are going to get charged by gator men. Like, you cannot stop that many medium-based dudes running at you with the delivery system. And there are multiple delivery systems in the faction. Even you can make the argument that Barnabas's feet can be a delivery system because since Mercs doesn't, or excuse me, Minions doesn't have a ton of guns, it's not like P. Krios where you're like, I'm going to knock everything down and kill it all. It's, I'm going to knock everything down and now it can't do anything other than stand up and walk or make melee attacks at things it's engaging.
Yeah.
And now that buys me the time to get my, my whole massive pile of Gator Men into threat range of your whole army.
Yeah.
And now you either get a choice of back up and lose on scenario or take it to the face.
Yep.
So, is that as good as Krios? Probably not. But it is. I mean,
we're getting to the offensive side of these, but
yeah. So, what are you going to do about it?
Good question.
A lot of board control doesn't work super great. Although I will say, in general, boostable guns against Gators is pretty solid.
Yeah. They have unyielding to add to that armor. So
yeah,
shooting them before they get to you is nice.
If you can catch them at arm 16, you can remove quite a few of them.
Yeah.
And sometimes you need indirect attacks to do that. I mean, obviously, Rask feet makes it really hard to shoot them. Like, you're not really doing a lot of shooting, probably.
Yeah. Yeah.
And that's the best delivery system, in my opinion.
Yeah.
And then when they get there,
I think it's important to concentrate on one unit of them.
Yeah.
Well, at least in the Malok instance. Or sometimes you can maybe focus on the things that are tuning them up.
Yeah. Or you
not that they're not good without any tuning up.
Or you chaff them with jam units that are not worth a lot.
Yeah,
you
they're make, still 9 points.
You make those Gator Men hit a unit of 6-point obstructors.
Yeah.
Because Gators, typically, they don't have the guns to remove screens, so they have to chew through screens with melee, and that's not good for them.
Yeah, that's very true.
And they don't have a lot of tough removal either, as far as I can recall.
No, I don't think so.
So, like, a Boomhauer-type situation is bad for them.
Yeah.
Although, I will say, what's pretty good against tough is having 2 attacks on every model and rerolls.
Yeah, and so, reach.
And reach on one,
and one of the attacks.
And 12-inch threat range to quite a bit of it. Although, again, talking about
living stuff.
Convergence, that's pretty good.
Yeah.
The Gators are not nearly as scared of Convergence, I guess.
That's true. All right, next one on the list is low-pow gun lines.
That's just basically, like, what am I going to do about Signar?
Yeah, Signar and Rhett probably falls into that category, too.
The primary difference between meta-ing against those two factions is with I think they're actually very similar to meta against for the most part.
Yep.
Signar is backed with significantly better control elements. Rhett infantry, melee infantry is significantly better than Signar melee infantry.
Yeah. So, I don't think there's any argument there.
Yeah, like Rhett has, you know, 15-inch threat range halberdiers.
Yeah, well.
You know, Signar has no equivalent to that.
Right.
I could take steelheads.
Yeah, you could.
You know, but it's not the same thing.
No, it's definitely not.
The Signar list is going to be a manipulate you, move you around, slow you down, as you run at me, and I'm just going to peck at you, and it's going to be...
You're going to get it by volume of shots.
You kind of create more of a catcher's mitt, I think, with a lot of signalists than you do with Rhett. I think Rhett has the ability to play a better combined arms game.
Yeah.
They don't have a ton of control. I mean, Kalissa feet is some control. Ron can TK you around and shit like that, but it's not the same as like an Epic Haley feat and a TK or a P Haley or even some of the center casters that don't have the control, they've got access to the Black 13th.
Yeah.
They've got access to Gorman and that kind of thing. So.
So what do you want in your list here?
Well, I'll tell you
stealth stuff that is not as great as it used to be.
No, I think stealth is not no longer the answer. Because Signar has never really had a huge problem with stealth.
No.
Infantry, at least.
Yeah.
And then some casters can deal with heavies like Siege and Cray because they have Mage Sight. And Rhett.
And Rhett hasn't.
Rhett has Rifleman, which Assyria. Is going to be one of your lists, or Assyria, right. I think the trick is going to be armor.
Yeah.
Those. And it doesn't necessarily have to be like the Miserable Meat Mountain level of armor.
Yeah.
But it needs to be a level of armor. Like, fast armor is a huge problem.
Yeah. And things with deflection or deceleration.
Yeah, any kind of delivery system, right? Good defensive feats that can stop some of the shooting, good armor buffs, things like Stormwall on Kruger 2 are a huge problem for those kind of lists, stuff like that. So, you know, Signar can manipulate you around in quite a bit as well. So any kind of model that can't be pushed, whether it's Colossals, whether it's like Tiberian type shit, I mean, that's pretty huge.
Yep. I also think playing a strong scenario list is probably important.
I agree.
Because those gun lines don't really want to get their toes into a scenario.
Yep.
Let's see, what's next? Colossal buff list. So, you know, super tuned up Galleon.
Mm-hmm.
Or
when we say buff, do we mean armor buff?
I think that we're talking about like this all eggs in one basket.
Usually
This armor buff. Yeah.
Because I think we had another Colossal entry coming up soon. And we're getting towards the end of the list, right?
We're getting close, yeah. We're about two-thirds of the way through.
Obviously, purification / upkeep removal, almost all of those armor buffs are upkeeps.
Yep.
The ability to chaff a Colossal and force it into bad trades.
Yeah.
Like, I have a couple cheap heavies.
It gets tough with Colossals, though, because they can still sort of do what they want to do while they're engaged. Chaffing is a little harder for a Colossal, I think.
Chaffing in the sense that you were keeping a Colossal from getting into melee with like your heavies until you're dictating when they can get into melee, which I don't actually find hard at all. Colossal bases are so big that they really have trouble with that.
Yeah.
You know, especially when there's like that, there's like an obstruction or a wall kind of mid table and they have to maneuver.
If you can put a wall or an obstruction down on a table, huge deal.
It. Yeah, they're gonna just stand there and shoot you. And a lot of the Colossals, they're not worth their points if they're just shooting their gun every turn. A lot of them.
Yeah, maybe.
Now, the ones that take a lot.
Yeah, ones that can drag, for instance, there's two of them.
Even that, I mean, drag is mitigatable to some extent, but I agree. But yeah, if you look at the Colossals that are good, they're the ones that have, that can be a gun platform most of the game and earn their points back, or at least earn a lot of points back.
Like Earthbreaker, Galleon, Primaxium.
What are you doing with your hands right now?
Sorry.
Really weird.
So what else? What else do you want to play against them?
We're recording in a submarine.
Yeah, we all live in one. Tell them.
I don't know. What was the next question? Sorry.
I said, well, what else? What else is your plan besides chaffing? Anything else?
Oh, I mean, crush armor.
Yeah,
single target armor crushing. Ion and Hole, Ragman.
I think it's possible to look at the
weapon master,
the support system that's making that Colossal. So.
Or just kill their caster.
Unbreakable.
Assassinating is a really good way to end that game.
Scenario is another good way.
Yep. Yeah, I mean, I think the Galleon list is very vulnerable to Bark getting killed, obviously. I mean, every list is vulnerable to their caster getting killed. But that and Scenario, like you said, because they don't have a lot of Scenario pieces because they're spending so much on buffing. There's usually like a snapshot or something. That's about it. So
the next three are all like the finger quotes net list.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, the Cro-Mac net list. We'll start with that one.
I think fighting the Chromac netlist is actually very similar to fighting most good Circle Beast Heavy lists outside of maybe Kruger 2, and that's just have boostable guns.
Yeah.
And the reason why Kruger 2 pairs well with that is if your faction has good boostable guns, you will not see Chromac, you will see Kruger 2.
Right,
who will
you'll
shut
see
down
the other list.
Most of those guns, unless they're really long range. That being said, having some boostable long range attacks, Warpwolves are surprisingly easy to kill at range. I've seen Getorix get removed before he gets to do anything a lot. My Getorix and other people's Getorix, it happens.
Watch out for Halberdiers.
Yeah. And at range, we mean 15-inch threat range of Halberdiers over a wall.
Yeah, that was a good day.
I bet it was.
Also, make sure you're not playing into Bestial just crushing your life.
Yep.
Don't forget about that spell when you see that guy.
That's almost just one of those, like, if you play Krix, just know that list exists, that you will probably see it at a con if you play Krix.
Yeah.
You better have some kind of answer, whether it's a weird, Krix list that fights anti-Krix, like something like an Epic Scar or a Morton Ebro or something like that, or if you just have some other answer that maybe no one's thought of yet, but you need to have an answer for that list.
You will
but otherwise,
see
outside of that, it's just a good long yo-yo list, long threat range yo-yo. Kaya 2, Kaya 1, I mean, Circle just does that. I mean, Sprint Animus is in every list, basically.
Yeah.
So the things that are good against Circle, the boostable guns, the long melee infantry threat ranges, are just as good against Chromac as they are against other lists.
Right.
Also, Chromac has scenario issues because he wants to play way back.
Yeah.
If my Warpwolf can go like 18 inches, why would I...
As long as you
do anything,
as long as you control
zones.
Him in that 18 inches,
yeah.
All right, next one is Lich 2. There is no answer.
It's super well documented at this point, but I think I think you need good.
At least it's on here. Even without us giving, one of the hundreds of theories of how to beat it, it needs to be in the list of things to consider when you're making. Getting back to the point of why we're going through this list,
you have to know it exists, and basically you need high quality guns. You need to not feed him X-Carnate targets, or you need to play a list that is not that invincible to X-Carnate.
Nope.
The problem with that is the list that can shrug off the POW 12 X-Carnate or the Purge, those lists don't love Weapon Masters charging them. Right?
Yep.
Like Miserable Meat Mountain's like, I don't care about Purge, but then, a bunch of Banes to charge them and they're like, oh, fucking dead. That one also, you need to have a plan on getting rid of Tartarus early, because now that he can't be brought back with the feet, it's really important to get rid of him.
Yes. I agree.
Also,
that list is so underpowered now.
Don't rely on Tough very much, because there's a Blood Hag in that list.
Yeah. Although she can't be brought back either.
That is correct.
Next and final net list one on here is Denny 2, which we already sort of talked about when we talked about jamming.
Have a plan to just assassinate her on her feet turn.
Yeah.
Or, let me rephrase that.
Bring guns, especially ones that can see through. Magic guns.
Yeah, magic guns / things that ignore cover / really high accuracy guns. Like Signar can just kind of be like, I'm just going to shoot her in the face. So she better not come up in feet, right?
Right.
If you can force her to have to think about that on the feet turn.
Yeah.
Where she doesn't charge one of her own models in feet or just walk up in feet. And she can stay in corporeal then.
Yeah, that Denny game I won at Adepticon, the guy never got close enough to feed on more than just the very front rank of my list.
You were playing a ret list with a significant.
I was playing a ret list with Assyria in it.
And you had Ironholt in that list too, right?
Yes.
Yeah, that's a big deal. Ironholt, big deal in that matchup, I think.
Yeah.
Also, just make sure you have some pieces that you can get in up into zones and then not lose them to two turns of her beating the shit out of you because she feeds on you.
Yeah. Yeah.
I think you have to have speed to fight her, but at the same time, then your army may not be durable enough to handle her army hitting you twice, essentially. So, any kind
good.
Of answer to Statixis Raiders is a good answer to Epic Denny, I feel like, because that's usually the crux of it, is getting jammed by Raiders, and then she feeds on top of it.
Yep.
So.
All right, so then we're getting to some stuff we sort of touched, but stealth battle groups rather than stealth infantry spam.
I think you just need to understand that.
That's pretty specific. There's only a couple of casters that really do this.
Yeah, and I think you just need to understand that there are a couple casters with Shadow Pack, but then there's also casters that have like Gorshade 1 has a spell that's basically Shadow Pack.
Mm-hmm.
Also, there are factions that can bring a bunch of stealth. Like, let's say you're talking about Kaya 1. Yep. She's got Megalith, Double Stalker, Gorax. Well, that's basically a stealth battle group.
Yep.
She occultates Megalith, and then both Stalkers are going to have
both stealth. Stalkers are hanging out in a cloud.
Yeah. So dealing with those pieces, it's kind of the same stuff we talked about like with Circle, right? It's long range, like long threat range weapon masters, boostable guns that can ignore stealth,
yep,
etc. Or forcing them into bad trades slash chaffing them.
Uh-huh.
Tough infantry, things like that. And then I guess maybe against, I would say the same shit applies to probably Gorshade 1, and then really Lilith 2 is the outlier there. Like you better not, you just make sure you make a list that just doesn't auto-die to guns.
Yep.
Have a way to screen your caster and still deliver your army.
Right.
I just, Lilith 2 is like the biggest paper tiger in my opinion. And part of that is not because she's not good, but I also think I just never see her. And I think it's so difficult to play her well and not lose on scenario. If you don't kill a caster, you don't significantly like blow their whole list off the table.
Yeah.
She just, you know, scenario is just a huge problem.
It definitely is.
Just run to engage her shit.
And you have like 30 points in ranged heavies.
Yeah. And you know, honestly, like I have yet to play again. I've played against Jake playing Lilith 2 once, and it was almost kind of a combined arms Lilith 2.
Yeah.
I'd love to play that matchup more because I just don't know how to feel about it. Some days I'm like, I'm not afraid of this at all. And then other days I'm like, wow, she just blows like two warpulse off the table and it's bad news, right?
Yeah.
I think, you know, if you're relying on, if your plan is stealth heavies that are easily killed by range guns, she's going to give you a rough time.
Yeah.
So
you're saying the answer is take Lilith too?
That's meta as fuck.
Yeah. All right, next one is Magic Denial. So, the book, Druids, Chromac.
This is just the inverse of the Butcher 3 thing. Don't bring shit that has to rely on your caster being midfield and casting spells, right? You know, like a good...
Or units like Mittens or Druids.
Yeah, right,
That their primary attacks are magic.
Yep. Yeah, like and it's more of like a trap. Like, don't build both of your lists with a shtick based around magic.
Right.
Because then you're going to hit one of these.
Yep.
You need to have an alternate drop. More than it's like a thing you have to meta a list specifically against, but just don't build into that magic, anti-magic trap that does exist out there. You know, maybe...
It's not that common.
20% of lists you see.
But damn, it is like staunch, you're going to lose this game. You know, if you get locked into like Ron against Chromac and you have to drop Ron,
bad.
You're done. Really Beastial is just, you're done.
Yeah.
You know, sometimes that happens.
Yeah, it depends though. You know, maybe your Ron list is not as one-dimensional as other Ron lists.
Let's say the original Ron tier 4.
Well, that's
Charge of the Battle Mages.
That's like one of those like 80-20 lists that's like good, really good against a lot of shit, and then just loses to spell hate. Yeah,
yep.
But I don't think anybody should be building lists that are that one-dimensional.
Fair enough. And then the very last one, drum roll, is Pop and Drop list.
So I think Pop and Drop now is not defined by like a Kreos feat or a Striker 1 Earthquake spell.
It's definitely growing.
It has become much more of a, I have an Earthbreaker and you don't. That list is fucking terrifying.
Yeah. Earthbreaker or what's the other, the dude that got you?
Yeah, I'm not going to tell people to meta against P-Magnus. That's like saying
meta against
leprechauns.
Yeah, he's the only one that can take that thing, isn't it?
Well, both Magnuses can take the knockdown, guys, and you don't see. I would say Magnus 2, I'm surprised you don't see more of, but Magnus 1 is kind of universally reviled as a shitty
meta
monster.
Against leprechauns.
Yeah, don't meta against leprechauns. If you have Chuck in your meta, I'm sorry.
Yeah, me too. So, solutions bring steady stuff. Know the exact threat ranges that you have to deal with. You know, to pick the side of the table that has cover.
Even cover. I mean, a lot of the pop and drop stuff.
A lot of it doesn't. You know, the feat-based ones don't matter.
You need to really understand what the Earthbreaker does and probably play against it a couple times. And if you have, like, a Merc player locally, and you're let's say you're going to your first con, and you have a local Merc player, but they don't play the Earthbreaker a lot or they haven't gotten it yet, see if you can encourage them to, like, play it against you a couple times just so you can see what it does. And what it does with certain casters. And one of the really scary ones, the Ostrom Earthbreaker, I don't really, outside of just blanket my caster has solid ground, like a P-Balder. Yeah. I don't know what the fuck you do against that. It's such a terrible threat, and it's... I want to say the knock-on guns are range 14, plus, you know...
Like, is that with snipe?
That's with snipe, yeah. We're talking about, yeah. That's what makes it scary, is the snipe, yeah. Snipe, and then a Thor exists.
Just put two steady jacks in front of your caster.
Yeah, I guess. Then they just get shot up. I mean, it's got pretty good guns.
But yeah.
I would just say, I don't really want to say write this list, write that list, because I don't honestly know the perfect answer to any of those. I don't know if there is one.
No.
I definitely think stealth battle groups have a pretty good advantage.
Yeah.
Stealth casters have a nice advantage. Spacing your models properly, like playing well, knowing that your opponent has an AoE knockdown that does have to direct hit.
And so it has to direct hit. Don't put your caster next to a shifting stone or something.
That's not stealth. Like, it's the second unit that doesn't have stealth. Yeah, that's a bad idea. Don't put your caster in your objectives.
Yep.
That's something I did recently. I just got Nemo 3 randomly assassinated.
Yep.
Epic Crystal shot the objective and knocked him down. So stuff like that, that's just good play. As far as list building, I don't know. I would say that it depends on your faction.
Yeah.
But you better be ready to alter your normal playstyle. That may include, like, you know, I guess your own Colossal. Hanging out behind your own Colossal is always a good play against that.
Yeah. Unless they have Terran.
Yeah.
But yeah. Obviously, it's things to try.
Much like every other list that you see Terran in, if you ever see Terran, more than likely she's in there to kill your caster, or a threat to kill your caster, and you need to get rid of her ASAP.
Yep.
Or at least threaten her to the point she stays way back and then is not relevant for the Shadowfire.
Right.
Shadowfire is only range 10, although we are talking about a Snipecaster. So yeah, hopefully that wasn't too boring and gives you guys at least... I mean, that's not a definitive list. There's probably a bunch more archetypes, but I would say that at least it gives you an idea of what does my faction do, or the faction I want to bring to X tournament do. Is it a local tournament? Is it not? And then you can build a list of matchups that you're worried about. Like...
Let's talk a little bit about how we can use this tool.
Okay.
So let's say we write this, you know, we write all these down or put them in a spreadsheet or whatever, and we add the ones that we think, the 10 I'm sure we forgot that we'll see on the Muse thread or something.
Sure. Yeah.
I think the first thing that you want to do is consider where you're going. If you feel completely comfortable wiping some of these off the list completely, sure. Or adding, like, I know for sure this guy's going to be there or whatever, and put, you know, maybe prioritize those. But then I think you look at maybe the list that you're comfortable playing or you're used to playing, or, you know, whatever you propose to take, and, you know, make another axis, and then just start putting X's next to the ones that you think you have covered by that list.
Yeah.
And then what you can, you know, I was thinking about in the shower, there's a couple different ways you can look at this. You can look at it like, you know, the way we discussed our differences for making pairings for Adepticon, where I was like, Ron is an 80%, and then I'll find something to cover Ron.
Yeah.
You know, if Ron's going to be an 80%, his list better fucking have axes next to at least 80% of those matchups we just talked about, right?
I agree.
At least the ones that, you know, what's going to cover 80% of the field.
And, you know, and then there's like, you can get really granular and be like, how deep does this cover it? Does it make it a game, or does it crush it?
Yeah, exactly. Or does it... Maybe it's a red X or a green X. I don't know.
I don't know either. Yeah. And again, this is like sort of not a, hey, do this exactly. Here's a textbook on how to do this.
Yeah, no, this is something we're just under construction right now.
Yeah, this is how you construct your own sort of form. I mean, I remember I've been bored at work, you know, watching programs install and sit there with a yellow pad, and I literally wrote down like caster/list that I was worried about.
Yeah.
And then the two casters I was playing and what they covered. And like put little X's next to it.
Yeah.
And that, you know, that was kind of the beginning of this idea. And then kind of going from there. And you know, a lot of people don't think of covering. They think of more of what is my opponent. Like, I'm going to ask questions more than I'm going to answer questions.
Yeah.
But at the same time, I think you need to be cognizant that there's always going to be a list out there that's going to have something that you have to, that is going to put you on the back foot.
Yeah.
You're never going to be just the aggressor in 100% of your games.
No, you can't.
No, there's always going to be something that out-threats you or something that turns off your shtick. And then it's the difference between a decent player and a good player is adjusting and knowing that exists and how to handle it. And how to eventually create a game situation where you are the aggressor again. You can start doing the things you want to do on the table. And sometimes you have to just change your play style. But I guess at least in the list building component, being aware – is super important. And that's what this will help you do, I guess.
I think so.
Whether it's on a cocktail napkin or in like a fucking pivot table.
Yeah.
You know, it's up to you.
Yeah. But definitely appreciate some feedback on anything we might have missed. I'm sure there's stuff.
I'm sure, yeah. And you know,
and, if anybody has better ideas on how to apply this kind of thing.
I would say a better idea, or at least a thing that would help us, is somehow making these where we have less archetypes.
Yeah. It would be nice to be able to be that granular, but this game's fucking complex. I know. Or, I'm sorry,
broad, yeah.
Broad with each of the categories.
Yeah,
but
like we've gotten a little, maybe a little too fine text on it, but at the same time, I don't know how much. Maybe when you write it for yourself, you're like, I have these five lists that I know are good lists.
Yeah.
And then you can start just saying, working the other way around, from list to what it covers, as opposed to here's the things to cover, what list covers it. And then you could be a little less specific with, you know, like, oh, this list has a ton of RFPs, so it covers this.
Yes.
Okay, next one. Yep.
Yeah, maybe that's the way to look at it, is look at the components of your list.
Yeah.
And we just talked about, you know, maybe you need subtext for each of these. Like, here's the thing I want in my list to beat this,
yeah,
or to make it the list that I use against this.
Yeah.
It has no knockdown. It has RFP. It has undead models or whatever.
Here's my list. Here's the answers it contains.
Yes.
So where does that
allow me to put an X?
Yeah, that means it covers maybe Lich, okay, and it covers, you know, Thagrosh 1 well, or something, you know, whatever. I'm just throwing shit out there.
Yeah.
You get what I'm saying?
I think another important component to this is being able to sit down at a steamroller, look at your opponent's sheet, and realize which, you know, category their lists fit in.
Yeah.
And that's probably the harder part for me sometimes. You know, sometimes some lists are obvious. It's like, oh, he has 3 units of Mechanithralls and 2 units of okay, I know what this is. But, you know, some mix of stuff that has some mercs in it or whatever, and you're like, maybe I don't know where this guy's going with this.
I think you got to be, ultimately, there is no quick, like, this is the answer for that.
Yeah. That's what's beautiful about this
game. Here's how you, there's no, like, University of Phoenix for War Machine. Like,
what?
Like, I'm gonna, like,
I don't know where you're going with this.
I'm going to get a master's degree in War Machine in a year by putting in minimal effort.
Oh, okay.
That's not going to happen. You got to be a student of the game, and if you really want to be able to look at a pair of lists and
Brian, I'm a Phoenix.
Yeah, I'm sorry, buddy. And I'm not out to offend anybody. I don't really even know anything about University of Phoenix. I just know it's the butt of a lot of jokes,
yeah,
including the joke I just made. Let's just say, you know, random online college that has easy to get degrees that don't mean anything.
Fair enough.
So if you're not willing to put the time in, like, for example, at Musa Minis, over the past few events, Chili has been going to these events and he tweets the pictures of people's list pairings,
yeah,
before the tournament, and then he posts, you know, like, oh, here's the matchups or whatever, right?
Yeah.
That information is available. Go look at it.
Yeah.
You can figure and then you can look at them and try to figure out what their lists do. And then if you can't, then you can go look at that player who maybe posts battle reports, or you can ask somebody like, hey, what I saw per year playing this list and I don't get it. Can somebody give me a, like, why he has, yeah, this and this and this list? What does this list do?
Mm-hmm.
That information's out there and the community is perfectly willing to, even if the player isn't going to be like, oh, this is what it does and this is what I'm afraid of.
Yeah.
The community can probably break it down for you if you are willing to put in the effort to look at it and you're
tactful about how you ask for it.
Yeah.
You know, don't be a dick complaining this list is unbeatable or some shit,
yeah,
like that. You know?
Right. Yeah. And everyone immediately is going to devil's advocate everything you're saying.
Even, yes,
if it's, even if you're right, if you're like,
yes,
I can't beat this list, everyone's going to tell you you're a dummy. You,
yeah,
know, this list.
Just don't put out something mopey, I guess is what I'm saying, because you're only going to get negative feedback.
No, I think that's just a good general bit of advice for life.
That's what we try to give here at Warmans.
Advice.
Yeah. So what's up? You want to do recommendations?
I'm going to recommend that when the weather's nice, you play some tennis.
Yeah?
It's the best game.
It's an alright game.
We all
know about your love affair of Europeans and tennis.
You know, Europeans...
You look like a European tennis player.
Europeans, I will take them or leave them, but tennis, I will keep forever.
Can you do a British accent for me right now?
No.
Please?
In fact, if we have any British listeners, I apologize for Bill sort of implying that you're European. You guys don't like that very much.
I'm pretty sure that they are European.
Okay, well. Welcome to the Twitter hellstorm that you've just created.
Well, I'm glad I don't deal with the Twitter account.
Oh, fuck, that's right. Anyway, we're going to go play tennis. So, Bill, what do you have?
I would recommend throwing lobs at Brian because he loves to play the net like a little bitch.
Yeah. I have this whole, like, I play the net, but I'm, like, 5'6". So, like, I'm, like, exceptionally aggressive for being a short guy, and then I do occasionally get lobbed on. But fuck it. I'll make you hit the right lob.
That's fine. You better practice my lob.
You better topspin that shit right in the corner, or I'm going to go get it.
Yeah.
I ran one down on you the other day.
Yeah. We had an exceptionally good match.
Yeah, I was sore.
That's another thing that's important about tennis, is you have to have an opponent that's, like, of similar caliber.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
Otherwise, it's not fun at all.
That exists out there. Like, and they're actually, the real chat, you know, serious talk for a second. The USTA runs, like, an online league where basically you get a tennis professional to rate you on a scale, and then...
This is where the podcast just fades out.
Okay. Warman's Podcast at Twitter. Excuse me, at Warman's Podcast on Twitter. Facebook.com/Warman's Podcast. Hit us up. Tell us what you think about the men's tennis game or our list archetypes or any of this errata/conversion nonsense.
Yeah.
And, yeah, apologize for not putting a podcast out in a while, but like we said earlier, we ate one. So try to get back on our weekly format here.
Yeah.
It is summer, guys. And it's nice outside, so we're leaving.
It's tough. See ya.
Later.
Bye.
And then you actually can they match you up with opponents that you meet up and stuff, or you just go to your local tennis club.
So it's like Grindr for tennis.
I don't know what Grindr is.
Sure you don't.
Not really. What is it?
End of podcast.